Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
The second Psalm. Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? And this Psalm, this second Psalm, is quoted in four places in the New Testament. And from that, we learn a lot about that Psalm. And there's things we learn from them. Let's look at some of these passages. One thing we learn, it is indeed the second Psalm. It says, Acts 13:33, God hath fulfilled the same unto us, their children, and that He raised up Jesus again, as it is also written in the second Psalm. Thou art my Son, this day have I begotten thee. Quote, right from that Psalm, and called the second Psalm. Now my Dixon Bible here tells me that the Bible was divided into chapters and verses around the 1500s. Actually, the chapters around 1500s, the verses were much before that. I didn't realize that. The verses, the Bible divided into verses several hundred years before it was divided into chapters. And those are real good for location. If you want to find a passage, you say turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 1, and everyone can find it. But they're not always that good when it comes to interpretation. Because just like the commentaries, men divided the Bible into chapters and verses, and sometimes they break right in the middle of a thought, or they divided it one or two verses off, I would think. So we got to keep thinking that as we read that, and they're excellent for location. Now, the exception to that is the Psalms. Because they were always individual Psalms. There's always been, as soon as the Psalms were put together, 150 separate Psalms. It's really not correct, although we'll say this, because all the other books of the Bible, we'll say, turn to Psalm chapter 2. Well, it's not the second chapter of the book of Psalms, it's the second Psalm. They're all individual like that. And so we call them sometimes chapters, but that's a little bit of a misnomer when it comes to the Psalm. Something else we learn about the Psalms. It's a Psalm of David. David wrote this Psalm. Now, David didn't write all of the Psalms, and a lot of the Psalms are anonymous. And when you look at the Old Testament, the second Psalm is anonymous. There's no name given or in the title or anything to indicate that it came from David. You might could judge from the context and the subject matter that it probably did. But it settled in the New Testament church. They were gathered together, Lord, Thou art God, which has made heaven and earth and the sea and all that in them is, who by the mouth of Thy servant David said. Why did the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? So now we know that David wrote that psalm. But not only that, he wrote it by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. This wasn't just David writing poetry. David, the Lord said this by the mouth of His servant David. God gave us the second Psalm through David as His prophet. And so that's something that we learn about this Psalm from the New Testament. Something else we learn. This is a Psalm about Christ. Now, you didn't have to go to the New Testament to learn that it was a messianic psalm. You see that term Messiah? That is the Hebrew word for the New Testament word Christ. And so you've got the Messiah, the Christ. Both of those words mean the one that is anointed. And that very word is found in the second verse of this psalm. The kings of the earth set themselves together, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed. That Hebrew word translated there, anointed, is that word Messiah in the Hebrew language. It's the word from which we get that English word today, Messiah. And so this is a messianic psalm. It was always recognized as a messianic psalm. And the Jews of the day of Christ would read this psalm in anticipation of a Messiah that would be coming to fulfill these things. But the New Testament confirms that as well. In every place this psalm is mentioned in the New Testament, it tells us that this is a psalm about Christ. Why did the heathens rage and the people imagine vain things? The kings of the earth stood up and the rulers gathered together against the Lord and against His Christ. And then the interpretation for of a truth, against Thy holy child Jesus, whom thou hast anointed. Both Herod and Pontius Pilate and the Gentiles, for the people of Israel were gathered together to do whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined before to be done. This is a psalm about Christ. Again, Acts 13:33, God hath fulfilled the same in their children, in that he hath raised up Jesus again, as it is written in the second psalm, thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee. Now that not only tells us it's a psalm about Christ, this is a psalm about the resurrection of Christ. And that's what it's talking about when it says, this day have I begotten thee. And I'll explain that in just a little bit. Again, Hebrews 1 in verse 5, for unto which of the angels saith he at any time, thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee. This first chapter of the book of Hebrews is exalting Christ above the angels. He's saying, you can't say Jesus is an angel. Now the angels are great, but Jesus is greater than any of the angels. Why, unto which of the angels did he say at any time, thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee? Our Jehovah's Witness friends have problems with that passage, because they'll tell you that Jesus is a created being, that he is an exalted angel. But it says here in Hebrews that God didn't say this to the angels, but he did say this about Jesus. And so that means Jesus is not an angel. He's not just an exalted angel. So they've got that part of their doctrine wrong. But then in Hebrews chapter 5 in verse 5, talking about Christ being raised up, the psalm is talking mostly about Christ being raised up to be king. But the old prophecy said that the Messiah would come and he would both be a king and a priest. When he would become priest, he would become a priest. And so in Hebrews chapter 5 in verse 5, talking about Christ being raised up to be priest, says, so also Christ glorified not himself to be made an high priest, but he that hath said unto him, thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee. So it's a psalm about Christ, about his resurrection, about him becoming king, about him becoming the priest. And these are the benchmarks that we use then to go back to the Old Testament to study the psalm. We know these things from the New Testament, so let's carry back in the Old Testament. And we know how to look at this psalm and put it in context. And anything about it that we wonder about, well, we know how to fit it in to these things from the New Testament that we know to be so. Now let's look at this psalm. It is a beautiful psalm in that it is poetry with four stanzas of three verses apiece. There are 12 verses there. And they divide those verses just that way. Four stanzas of three verses each. And it takes us first into the council chamber of the wicked, and then to the Lord in his heaven, and then to the king on his throne, and then finally to the preacher in his pulpit. And now we'll look at those four stanzas in just that manner. First, in the council room of the wicked. Why do the heathen rage? And the people imagine a vain thing. That word rage, you want to get a picture of what that word means? Look out over a stormy sea and see the waves turn and boil and the winds blowing and the lightning and the thunder and the storm at the stormy sea. That's what that word is talking about. Why are the heathen all upset like this and in such turmoil? And why do they imagine a vain thing? This is futile for them to think that somehow they are going to be able to thwart God's plan is futile. Why do they do this? It says the kings of the earth set themselves together and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord, against his anointed, which we talked about. Let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. Why, those heathens, they thought they were bound with cords unto what God wanted, and they did not want that. And so they are in turmoil. Now, the best interpretation of that is in the New Testament. Here's the commentary, an inspired commentary. For of a truth, they said, against thy holy child Jesus, whom thou hast appointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, with the Gentiles and the people of Israel, were gathered together for to do whatsoever thy hand and thy counsel determined before to be done. Matthew chapter 12 and verse 4. The Pharisees went out and held a council against him, how they might destroy him. Matthew chapter 27 and verse 1. All the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. They did not want God ruling over them. They in the council went, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. They are liberal in the very worst connotation that the word liberal holds, in that they wanted to be liberated from God. And in that they were fulfilling the parable that Christ told about those citizens who said, we will not have this man to rule over us. So here they are plotting to keep Christ from ascending to that throne. But let's go to the Lord in the heavens. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. He's in the heavens. He's not down here on the earth in these grubby councils. Now he can see right down in the... He knows exactly what they're thinking before they think it. He knows what they're plotting, and he can see into that council room, and he is high and far above in the heaven and cannot be touched by these raging heathen, and he laughs at them. Now don't think God thinks this is funny. This is not about God's sense of humor. He is laughing at them in derision. Look, they've made God mad. He'll speak to them in His wrath. He'll vex them with His sore displeasure. He is angry at them. Despite all their plotting and scheming and evil counsel, yet I've set my King on His throne. He is upon my holy hill of Zion. Zion, that was that religious term for that hill upon where Jerusalem stood, particularly where the temple was, the holy hill, the holy mountain, and it is the prophetic language for the church. Christ is on His throne. He's over all things pertaining to the church. And there He sits. And now let's go to the King on His throne. And the King tells us what the Lord told him. I'll declare the decree. I'll tell you what the Lord said to me. The Lord hath said, Thou art my Son. This day have I begotten thee. When I read that word begotten, I think of verses like John 3:16 where it says, God so loved the world He gave His only begotten Son. And that's talking about how that God was the Father of Christ and Mary gave birth to Christ being a virgin. And so that was that creative act. And the womb of the Virgin Mary that resulted in that child Christ. But that's not how the word is used here. It's a different way of using the word begotten. It still carries with it the idea of imparting life. But this is talking about imparting life so that He would rise from the dead. Revelation 1 and verse 5. Jesus Christ, who is the faithful witness and first begotten of the dead, and the prince of the kings of the earth. Colossians 1 and verse 18. He is the head of the body of the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things He might have preeminence. Imparting life unto that dead corpse, so that Jesus rose from the tomb. That's what He's talking about here when He says, this day have I begotten thee. It's His resurrection, Acts 13 and verse 33. God hath fulfilled the same in us, their children, in that He raised up Jesus again, as it is written in the second Psalm, Thou art my Son, this day have I begotten thee. Talking about His resurrection in Hebrews 1 and verse 5. He's in the context of being raised to be King. Thou art my Son, this day have I begotten thee. In Hebrews 5 and verse 5, raised from the dead, that He might be our High Priest. Thou art my Son, this day have I begotten thee. And now He's the King on His throne. Well, what's this mean then? Ask of me and I'll give thee the heathen for thy inheritance and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them with a rod of iron. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. I see the picture. Fellas, can't you see this? Give yourself an iron rod and then set out a bunch of clay pots and anyone you want to, just whack them. That's what He's talking about. He's got an iron rod Give me the heathen. There it is. Anytime I want to, I can whack it to pieces. What's he talking about there? Talking about that power and authority that the Lord has. Look in the New Testament. All power has been given unto me in heaven and on earth. Go ye therefore into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. That's the heathen for his inheritance. And he uses that the uttermost parts of the earth expression. And it's used in Acts chapter 1 and verse 8. You'll be witnesses unto me both in Jerusalem and Judea and in Samaria and unto the uttermost parts of the earth. It's about the kingdom of the Lord, like in the prophecy Daniel, that stone that came out of the mountain without hands and came and consumed all of the kingdoms and the kingdom that will stand forever. And so it's prophetic language about the rule of Christ as the gospel is spread throughout all the world and people become converted unto Him. Now let's go to the preacher in his pulpit. Here stands the preacher now, and he's giving those heathen a warning. And he's standing before the kings and the judges of the earth. And this preacher says, "Be wise now, therefore, O ye kings. Be instructed, ye judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kings, you that have plotted against the plans of God, be afraid. Be very afraid. Because you did not realize who you're dealing with. Kiss the Son, lest He be angry with thee." That is the kiss of submission unto Him. To gain His favor. You don't want His wrath kindled a little. You can perish when His wrath is kindled just a little. And so the heathen, you need to stop that raging. And the thing to do is to comply with the Lord and come under submission to His authority and His will. Welcome His bands. Welcome those cords. "My yoke is easy and my burden is light," the Lord tells us. And then this psalm ends beautifully. "Blessed are all they that put their trust in Him." You know, the first psalm began with a blessing, didn't it? "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly." And here, those ungodly in that vain counsel they have, this psalm now ends, "Blessed are they that put their trust in Him." Doesn't that make you want to be a Christian? I want to be a follower of this Lord and this King and this priest and this Christ whom God hath anointed. It reminded me of two psalms that we sometimes sing. One written by Martin Luther. "A mighty fortress is our God." Christ is called in that song the man of God's own choosing, and His kingdom is forever. But the other one, it's a more modern song, "This is my Father's world. And let me never forget that though the wrong seems all so strong, God is the ruler yet. Yet have I set my king on that holy hill of Zion." Well, trust in Him. Come to the Lord. Be obedient to Him in baptism. Put on Christ and serve Him, because His kingdom is forever.